The following is a class on the Srimad Bhagavatam, 6th Canto, Chapter Number 9, Texts Number 53, 54, and 55, given by His Grace Sriman Sankarshan Das Adhikari, recorded on December 24th, 2013, in North Sydney, Australia.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo
Dadhyan Atarvana Tvashtre Varma Abhejam Mat Atmakam Jishvarupaya Yat Pradat Tvashta Yat Tvam Adha Tata Dajanatarvanastvashtre Pramabhejam Mat Atmakam Vishwarupaya Yat Pradat Tvashtayatvam Adhashtata Dajanatarvanastvashtre Varmabhejam Mat Atmakam Vishwarupaya Yat Pradat Tvashtayatvam Adhastata. Dadhyan Dadhyansha Atarvana. The son of Atarva. Tvashtre unto Tvashta. Varma, the protective covering known as Narayan Kavacha. Abhejam, invincible. Mat Atmakam, consisting of myself. Vishvarupaya, unto Vishvarupa, yet which pradat delivered, tvashta, yet which tvam you adha received tata from him. Translation by Srila Prabhupada. Dajansha's invincible protective covering, known as the Narayana Kavacha, was given to Tvashta, who delivered it to his son Vishvarupa, from whom you have received it. Because of this Narayana Kavacha, Dadhichi's body is now very strong. You should therefore beg him for his body. Text 54. Imushmabhyam yachito shibhyam dharmagyon gani dasyati tatastaya ayudashreshto vishvakarma vinirmita yena vitta shiro hrta matteja upabrimhita. When the Ashvini Kumaras beg for Dajansha's body on your behalf, he will surely give it because of affection. Do not doubt this, for Dajansha is very experienced in religious understanding. When Dajansha awards you his body, Vishvakarma will prepare a thunderbolt from his bones. This thunderbolt will certainly kill Vritrasura because it will be invested with my power. Text 55. Tasmin vinihate yujyam Tejo Shrayuda Sampada Babuya prapsyata badrang vo nahang santi shamat paran. And Yudhishthira is killed because of my spiritual strength. You'll regain your strength, weapons, and wealth. Thus there will be all good fortune for all of you. Although Vitrasura can destroy all the three worlds, do not fear that he will harm you. He is also a devotee and will never be envious of you. Purport. A devotee of the Lord is never envious of anyone. What to speak of other devotees? As revealed later, Vitrasura was also a devotee. Therefore, he was not expected to be envious of the demigods. Indeed, of his own accord, he would try to benefit the demigods. A devotee does not hesitate to give up his own body for a better cause. Chanakya Pandit said, San nimite varang chago vinashe niyate sati. After all of one's material possessions, including his body, will be destroyed in due course of time. Therefore, if the body and other possessions can be utilized for a better cause, a devotee never hesitates to give up even his own body. Because Lord Vishnu wanted to save the demigods, Vitrasura, even though he able to swallow the three worlds, would agree to be killed by the demigods. For a devotee, there is no difference between living and dying. Because in this life, a devotee engages in devotional service, and after giving up his body, he engages in the same service in the spiritual world. His devotional service is never hindered. And thus end the Bhaktivedanta purports to the 9th chapter, 6th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled Appearance of the Demon Vitrasura. Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Jatapad Kamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raganitan Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Ladita Shri Vishakan Vitamscha Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prestaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namane Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pacharine Nivishesha Shunyavari Pushchacha Desa Tadine. That's pretty detached, isn't it? Willing to give up your life, your body, in the service of the Lord. But that's proper, because this body is not me. Now, if you think the body is you, then it's incomprehensible how one can give up the body. It's completely impossible if one thinks I'm the body. You see? But as soon as you understand, this body is simply a garment, and I don't depend on this garment for my existence. I can be wearing this garment or a different garment. In either case, my devotional service goes on. So with that kind of realization, even if death comes, one can give it up. Even in this material world, people are willing to die for their causes sometimes. Just like we were just in South Africa for the funeral. We didn't go to attend it. We just coincidentally, we were in South Africa on the day of Nelson Mandela's funeral. Everybody was talking about Nelson Mandela. The whole country was absorbed in Nelson Mandela consciousness, who many years ago he was put on trial for trying to bring about a revolution for there to be equal treatment for the whites and the blacks. He told in the court that I'm living for this cause, I'm willing to die for this cause also. So even we see that great reformers in this world, they're willing to die for their cause, you see. Even some material cause. So how much so a devotee who's living for the ultimate cause, you see. A devotee is even more prepared to give up his life if necessary for the service of the Lord. because it's not really me. It's just a temporary covering. So this is a very instructive lesson. One has to be very detached from his bodily identification to the point of being even willing to give up the body if necessary in Krishna's service. So what sort of faith or consciousness would be required to be that detached? That requires full faith in the orders of the spiritual master. In other words, for the disciple, the words of the spiritual master are more dear than his own body even. I can give up my body, but I can never give up the order of my spiritual master. You may take my body away, but I will never take away my dedication to my Guru Maharaj, you see. That in complete submission to the order of the spiritual master. But in the neophyte stage, you see, we're not there yet. We're thinking, well, spiritual master said this, but you know, I don't feel like doing that. We're not very as neophytes, we're not really that dedicated yet to the order of the spiritual master. We don't really take the order of the spiritual master as our life and stuff. We're still thinking about our sense enjoyment. That's neophyte consciousness, you see. So we have to learn how to rise beyond that neophyte platform, thinking, being more interested in our sense gratification than we are in serving our spiritual master's instructions. It's very important we learn how to rise beyond that level, because you really can't be happy on that level, you see. Of course, taking up Krishna consciousness on any level gives some degree of relief from the pangs of material existence. But it's not total relief does not come until one is completely dedicated to serving the order of the spiritual master in all times, places, and circumstances with every thought, every word, and every deed. So our neophyte position that we're in right now of saying, okay, the Guru's order is very nice and my sense gratification is also very nice, you see. It's not a very nice platform to be on, it really isn't. I mean, it's better than being a materialist. A million times better than being a materialist. At least we've begun the pathway. But we're not meant to remain as neophyte devotees attached to our senses gratification. We're not meant to stay on that platform of, you know, neophyte devotees. We're meant to become advanced devotees. That's what Prabhupada wants us to become, pure devotees, completely dedicated to following his instructions without any hesitation. That whatever order I receive from Srila Prabhupada, his representative, my spiritual master, I will accept as my life and soul. Without hesitation, yes, immediately, you see. Just like a nice example is I had two godbrothers. They're still around, two godbrothers. They're actually brothers. Gargamuni and Gargamuni. Brahmananda and Gargamuni, yeah. Two brothers, the Sharf brothers. Brahmananda joined, and then he convinced his younger brother, his kid brother, as we say in America. He convinced his kid brother to join Gargamuni. So they had been given the sannyas order and they were doing some preaching in the U.S. And then Prabhupada was giving a lecture in India and somebody challenged Prabhupada, "Why aren't you preaching in Pakistan?" In a public lecture. "You're preaching in India, why aren't you preaching in Pakistan?" He challenged Prabhupada. So Prabhupada took that challenge and he sent these two disciples. He said, "Okay, Brahmananda, you go to West..." At that time it was still one country. "You go to the eastern side, Gargamuni, you go to the eastern side, and Brahmananda, you go to the western side." Actually, the war was just breaking out at the time. The war between East Pakistan and West Pakistan. And they went just at that time. It was a time of great turmoil. And they immediately dropped everything and went to Pakistan. Can you imagine? and it was so heavy, Brahmananda would sit down with a blanket, you know, with some books, and people would come up and spit in his face. The Muslims would spit in his face. It was so heavy. But they accepted because Prabhupada said, that's all. They ordered immediate spiritual master says immediately, yes, go to Pakistan, give my whole life to preach in Pakistan. You see? But it was getting pretty heavy, actually, you know. So Brahmananda, actually there was a news, and they each of them had one brahmachari assistant, so there was actually four devotees preaching in the East and West Pakistan. And then there was a newspaper report that four Hare Krishna devotees in Pakistan had been shot dead. And Prabhupada heard this news report and his heart was just shattered because he thought his disciples had been shot dead in Pakistan. It actually wasn't true. It was a false news report. But then Brahmananda is going, oh, this is so heavy. And Prabhupada was only a few miles away in Bombay. I mean, it wasn't that far away, you know, just a short hop from Karachi to Bombay, not that very far. But, you know, it's like a million light years away in one sense, but geographically it was very close. So he sent a telegram to Prabhupada, do you think I can come to Bombay? And Prabhupada immediately, Prabhupada was so happy. Oh, they're not dead, they're alive. Immediately come. And Prabhupada just like a father will infectionally embrace his son, putting his hands all over the son's body in great affection. He was just like an affectionate father. He gave this most wonderful, loving embrace to Brahmananda, just patting him all over the body in great, loving affection that my son has not been killed. My son has not been killed, you see. So, the point is that if one is completely dedicated to one's spiritual master, you enter into the loving affection. The spiritual master feels great loving affection for such a disciple, you see. He's completely sold out to following whatever instruction he gives. The spiritual master feels great loving affection for him. So this dedication to the order of the spiritual master is a very, very special gift. If one can have that gift of being totally dedicated to the order of one's spiritual master, it brings one very, very close, very, very close to the spiritual master. It's a very, very special blessing if one can actually do that. If one can come off the neophyte platform thinking, yeah, the spiritual master said this, but I can't do that. The spiritual master said I should, but, you know, I can't really do that. See, that's the neophyte. I can't do it. Well, the spiritual master said it, but, you know, just somebody orders the spiritual master. I can't do that. Another example is the life membership preaching, which became the bread and butter of our preaching in India for many years. Enrolling life members who then donated some of rupees to support the movement. So the Prabhupada had some Western disciples there in India, and he told them to go out and sign up life members for X amount of rupees. They were thinking, how is this possible? They had never heard of such a thing. You could go to some Indian businessman and ask him to pay some fee for what? Of being a life member of ISKCON? No one had hardly even heard of it. They didn't have any faith that such a thing could be done. They're thinking, what is Prabhupada talking about? This is not a very practical thing, you know. They were thinking like that. They went out and spoke to a few people, nothing happened. You see, because they didn't have that complete faith in the order of the spiritual master. But then gradually, it happened. It started happening, and they realized that, yeah, Prabhupada really knew what he was talking about. And it became a huge success, the life membership program in India. It's still going on. So, we may receive an order from the spiritual master, and we may think, oh, this isn't very practical, you know. How would this could be done? It's just, I don't think this could be done. It's not really a practical thing. So I just neglected. But that's a namapara. You see, if one neglects the order, one disobeys the order of the spiritual master, that's the third offense against the holy name. Someone should not disobey the order of the spiritual master. You see, it's a very important thing. Because you can't, you understand this? Krishna and his name are the same. So chanting Hare Krishna means connecting with Krishna. But if one is disobeying the order received from his spiritual master, there's no connection. You can't connect. You're chanting on your lip, and the name is here, but you're not connecting with Krishna. As long as you disobey the order of the spiritual master, you're not connecting with Krishna. So you're not going to be satisfied. If you want to actually taste the bliss of Krishna consciousness, you have to accept the order of the spiritual master. Otherwise, no bliss. If you want to be blessed with bliss, you can either be blessed with bliss or you can miss the bliss. It's your choice, you see. If you follow the order of the spiritual master, you're blessed with bliss. If you don't follow his order, you miss the bliss. So it's your choice. You want to be blessed with bliss, you want to miss the bliss. The power is in your hands to be blessed with bliss or miss the bliss. If you agree to serve the spiritual master's order, you become blessed with bliss. If you neglect his order, you miss the bliss. So take your choice. You want misery or you want bliss? It's your choice. Those who neglect the order of the spiritual master, they never become happy. They never. Even they're wearing tilak, dhoti, even living in the ashram, you see. If they don't accept the order of the spiritual master, they don't feel that happiness in the heart. Because they're not connecting with Krishna. So one has to be very, very intelligent, not an ignoramus, a fool, you see. One should be very intelligent and think, the spiritual master's order is my life and soul. Whatever Srila Prabhupada has given, I must follow that instruction without deviation. That's how one has to think. And then one becomes jivan mukta, liberated soul. If one fully embraces that mood, fully takes it as his bread and butter, his rice, dal, and chapatis, his very existence, you see. I must accept the order of the spiritual master as my very life and soul. Prabhupada describes this further in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. He says, the disciple always remembers the order received from his spiritual master, and he always worships the order received from his spiritual master. That's how important it is. He not only always remembers the orders he received from his Guru Maharaj, but he worships the orders he has received from his spiritual master. That's how strong the instructions are. He worships those instructions. So we have to understand this process, how it works. Take it very seriously. Implement it with our every thought that goes through our brain, every word that comes out of our mouth, and every action we perform with our bodies, 24 hours a day, in all times, places, and circumstances. You see? Then you become a jivan mukta, liberated soul. Iha yasha harer dashe karmana manasagara nikalas bhaktivasta so jivan mukta so uchate. One who fully absorbs his mind, body, and words in the service of Krishna in all times, places, and circumstances becomes jivan mukta, a liberated soul in any condition. He can be living in the ashram, he can be living outside, he can be a book distributor, he can be a computer programmer. In any position, it doesn't matter, you see. If one who has taken the order of the spiritual masters, his very life and soul, he becomes a liberated soul. Bhaktivinoda Thakur was fully liberated. He was an employee of the British government. He was a fully liberated Jivan Mukta while he was working for the British government. You see? So it doesn't matter what your position is, it simply matters what is your state of consciousness. Am I completely dedicated to the order of my spiritual master, or is it some optional thing? You know, I'll have my duty to my wife, my kids, and the guru is maybe the third in the line, you see? First is the wife, then the kids, then the guru. That doesn't work. First myself, then my wife, then my kids. Guru's number four. You see, it doesn't work that way. That's not the way you attain Krishna. If you want to attain Krishna, guru has to be the first thing. My spiritual master's instructions. That has to be the first thing. You understand this point? That has to be the first thing. Otherwise, you're stuck in this material existence. Until we can accept the spiritual master's orders, our life and soul, we're going to take birth after birth in this material world. That's a bit. Why? Krishna says, unless you're the devotee of my devotee, you're not my devotee. Ye me bhakta jana prata na me bhakta te jana mad bhakta nanshi ye bhaktas te me bhakta tamamanta. It's right there in the Adi Purana. Krishna is telling Arjuna, unless you are the devotee of my devotee, you are not my devotee. So unless we can show Krishna that we're fully dedicated to following the order of our spiritual master, you're not my devotee. He would say, you're not my devotee. You're not dedicated to my devotee. You're not my devotee. You're not qualified to come back to Godhead because you're not the devotee of my devotee. So we have to take the order of the spiritual master very seriously. Just see. Krishna can see. Krishna knows our attitude. Krishna knows every thought. And he wants to see how much we're dedicated to serving the order of the spiritual master. He wants to see them. He's looking to see how dedicated are you to carrying out the order of the spiritual master. I'm not making this stuff up. This is all right out of Prabhupada's books. Everything I'm saying is Prabhupada's teachings. So take it very seriously. It's Prabhupada's teachings, not mine. I'm just a messenger, that's all. I'm just a messenger. So now I can ask if there's any questions. What is the result of carrying out the orders of the spiritual master out of duty in comparison to following orders out of love? The difference is, there's not much difference. Actually, there's not much difference. Because even though in the beginning there's no love, by doing it, the love will come. So actually there is no difference. It's like a green mango and a ripe mango. It's a mango. You have the mango. Duty means you're in the unripened state of bhakti, and love means the ripened state. It's actually the same thing. It's simply duty is a preliminary stage of love. Why do we feel hesitant to follow the order of the spiritual master? Well, the reality is we've been serving our senses for millions and millions of lifetimes, and we're just addicted to serving our senses. That's our addiction. And to come, we're not used to this idea of serving the spiritual master. We're comfortable and accustomed to serving our senses. That's been our comfort zone for millions of births. So this is something entirely new and different. Instead of serving your senses, you serve your guru instead. So it's a new thing. It's pretty revolutionary thing. It seems bizarre in the beginning. What? Serving the guru's order? And not serving my senses? So one has to have That is, we're just not accustomed to it. Therefore, how to overcome it? You have to hear transcendental knowledge from the guru, from the Vaishnavas, from the books. You have to take this knowledge, keep bathing, as Thoreau said, bathe your intellect. He said, in the morning I bathe my intellect in the stupendous and cosmogonal philosophy of the Gita, in which the modern day world and its literature appear to be very puny and trivial. So you have to bathe your intellect in this knowledge by regularly hearing the classes, by inquiring, by studying, by scrutinizingly analyzing these teachings from many different angles of vision, trying to understand them very, very deeply. That's how you overcome the hesitancy. What should a disciple do if the spiritual master gives a disciple an extremely difficult task? Well, I would say, what if you can't even do the easy task? I would counter that. What if you can't even do the easy task? Just like yesterday, I read Prabhupada's order about no threads around the wrist. And I see you're still wearing the threads on the wrist. A very easy thing to do. Snip. But you're still wearing the threads. Prabhupada said, stop this. Wearing the deity thread on the wrist. What about the easy things, you see? If I can't even do the easy thing, we're talking about the difficult things, we can't even do the easy things. So, first learn how to do the easy things. Actually, there's a very nice wisdom I've heard in this regard. It's very similar. It says, if you postpone something that's easy, it becomes difficult. And if you postpone something that's difficult, it becomes impossible. So actually, there's nothing difficult that the spiritual master orders. But when you postpone it, then it becomes difficult. It becomes difficult because the mind makes it difficult. If every instruction is actually easy, we think it's difficult is simply our mental concoction. So, just like here's a clear example. Just like a Band-Aid, you know, you put a Band-Aid on your wrist, and all the hairs are there, and it's time to take off the Band-Aid now. There's the easy way to pull it off and the difficult way to pull it off. What's the difficult way? One hair at a time. Isn't it? The easy way to go, shup, finish. But I'm thinking, oh, if I pull it off at once, it'll be so painful. All those hairs will be yanked at once. I just couldn't do that. I'll have to do it slowly and gradually, very gently. I will do it, one hair at a time. But what appears to be gentle and easy is actually difficult. You understand the point? What appears to be gentle and easy is actually difficult. If you just say, okay, boom, I'm going to do it now. You see? I don't want to go on book distribution. What if somebody says that Krishna is the devil? Or how can I possibly go on book distribution? You know, so many things, it's like impossible. I can't go because somebody may say something, or it might be, this may happen. The mind just makes it very difficult. Just get out there and just go out and you're there. Well, here I am, my book distribution, Kijai. You see, you just go do it. And it's not difficult, but we make it difficult. We manufacture, we take easy things and make them difficult by the influence and the mode of ignorance, procrastination. That's it. But Prabhupada also thought something was, just to be a little kind here, Prabhupada also thought that something was very difficult. Prabhupada also thought something was very impossible. The order he received from his spiritual master, he couldn't understand how it could be done. He also thought it was difficult. The spiritual master ordered, you must spread Krishna consciousness to the English-speaking world. Prabhupada had no idea how this can be done, but did that mean he didn't meditate on it and try to do it? No. You see, even if a spiritual master gives you the impossible task, you should think, as Prabhupada told us in Los Angeles, when he ordered the devotees to publish all 17 volumes of the Chaitanya Charitamrita with an X number of days, they said, Prabhupada, this is impossible. Prabhupada said, impossible is a word in a fool's dictionary. And they did it. They had the artist going 24 hours a day painting the paintings. One artist would be there, he would just paint until he'd fall asleep. Another artist would get up and keep going on the same painting. And the same thing with the editing and everything, at a round-the-clock marathon. When you just did it until you couldn't do it and you dropped down, another devotee would get up and keep the work going. They had 24 hours a day. They got, and they completed it in time. Then they met the deadline to get the Chaitanya Charitamrita published. Some other author was publishing in English, and Prabhupada wanted to be the first one to be published. That's why he pushed them so hard. Because to be the first published edition, that's very prestigious. So he wanted to have, that makes it more, you're more authoritative, you're the first one. So Prabhupada beat the other person who publishing him. He pushed his disciples like anything to do what seemed to be impossible. So impossible, right, Prabhupada said, is a word in a fool's dictionary. We have to take that which seems to be impossible and make it possible by our faith in the order of the spiritual master. Someone might say, well, rising at 4 a.m., it's extremely difficult. How could I possibly rise at 4 o'clock in the morning? I've never done that in my whole life. I always sleep till 9. How could I possibly get up at 4? It's impossible. But actually, it's not impossible. You just do it. You set your alarm for 4 o'clock and you just do it. You get up. The mind says it's impossible. It's too difficult. You just do it. See, Prabhupada ordered that once you come to Mangal Arati every day, you see. But I see in many temples, devotees live in the temple. They don't follow Prabhupada's instruction to come to Mangal Arati. What kind of nonsense is this? This is Guru Aparad. Prabhupada ordered every day, come to Mangal Arati. And devotees are living in Prabhupada's house. They're living in Prabhupada's temple and they're sleeping through Mangal Arati. This is a great offense. Because they say it's too difficult. You see? It's nonsense. Even at home, one can have Mangal Arati. You see? Rise early, have an arti. So we have to see, we're manufacturing these difficulties. It's our own brain. How does the disciple carry out the instructions if he does not feel he has the ability to carry out the order and get the proper result? Well, yeah, one may think, well, if I try to do it, I'm going to flop, so better not try. Better to not do it than to try to do it and be a failure. But the thing is, even if you try to do it and you're a failure, you know what's going to happen? You're going to learn something. Prabhupada said, failure is the pillar of success. Especially in spiritual life, failure is the pillar of success. So, okay, the spiritual master asked me to offer an arti, and I'm kind of nervous. I may screw it up, but just try your best and be corrected, whatever you do wrong. And this way you can learn how to do anything. Well, I'm not qualified. I remember one man, we asked him to wash the deity towels. He said, I'm not qualified to do them. I'm not qualified to wash the deity towels. That's not the move. Well, Gurudev, I can't do that because I'm not qualified. Actually, the fact is none of us are qualified to do any of this stuff. Simply, our only, the order of the spiritual master is our qualification. You understand? We're not qualified to do anything. We're not qualified to do any of this stuff. We're not even qualified to chant Hare Krishna. You see, we're so fallen. We're not qualified to even chant Hare Krishna, but the spiritual master has ordered you must chant Hare Krishna. So we do it, and we were offensive in the beginning, but gradually we learn how to perfectly chant in everything. We're not qualified to cook an offering for the deities. Krishna is used to Radharani's cooking. What is our cooking compared to Radharani's cooking? It's garbage. It's just a bunch of stool, what we cook for the Lord compared to what he's used to getting for Radharani. It's like stool. But when the order, but Krishna accepts it, even though it's like stool, our offerings are just like stool, he accepts it because he wants us to reawaken that loving relationship with him. So in spite of our qualifications, on the order of our spiritual master, we take up these things. Thank you for these nice questions. Okay. Those are some really good questions. What is the most important thing when we choosing a spiritual master? What I advise is this, because the injunction of Rupa Goswami is this. He says, Gurashvayam sadharma prichcha. Take shelter of the spiritual master and then inquire from him how to advance in Krishna consciousness. Therefore, my personal recommendation to people who ask me this question is, choose a guru where you'll get a very good opportunity to ask questions and get answers. It's just a practical thing. Take a spiritual master where you get the best facility for inquiring and getting answers. Sometimes the spiritual masters would give instructions, but the mentor would have a different instruction. So how to react and respond? That happened to me, because the temple president is considered a mentor on behalf of the spiritual master. Now, I received an instruction from Prabhupada one time, don't steal anything in Krishna's service. Prabhupada gave me this personal instruction. And one day I was, we had a chalkboard in the kitchen where you write up the menu, you know, for the Lord, the shopping list, I think it was. So, and I was the buyer. I would go out and do the shopping, but I had to get everything approved by the temple president. I said, Prabhu, we need some chalk for the chalkboard. He said, just go to the campus and steal it from one of the classrooms. That's what he told me to do. So, wow, here my temple president told me to steal the chalk, and Prabhupada said, don't steal. So what to do? And Prabhupada also told me to do what obey the temple president. So that's really a dilemma. He told me to obey the leader, and then the leader told me to disobey him. So, wow, what am I supposed to do? Well, I wrote the GBC. And they told me to obey Prabhupada, not to obey the temple president. So you have to be a little intelligent. Yeah. The DBC told me to follow Prabhupada and not steal the chalk. So sometimes the guru's order overrides the mentor's order. He's the higher authority. But you have to be, you don't want to ruin your relationship with your mentor also. You have to get all proud and haughty, you know. That I'm going to disobey your order. Ha, 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 ha. You know, you don't get all puffed up and like that. You always keep a humble mood because your mentor is obviously a qualified person who's helping you in many ways. So even though you may have to sometimes disobey, like I had to disobey my temple president's instruction, but still I still kept my respectful, humble relationship with him. How to show devotion and love while doing devotional service and sadhana. Well, how to show it? Don't worry about showing it, just manifest it, and then it'll automatically show. But I think what you're really asking is how to manifest it, not how to make a show of it. How to actually have devotion. I can understand your real question is how to actually have the love while you're doing the service. Prabhupada gave us credit that actually we already do have love because we're not being paid. Now, if some people are being paid for their service, then it's business. It's like being an employee. It's not bhakti. But the real service means I'm not being paid to do it. In fact, this devotional service is so wonderful, I would pay money for the opportunity to devotional service. If I'd be willing to pay $100 an hour for the opportunity to do devotional service. That's how valuable it is. Or $1,000 an hour. The opportunity to serve Krishna is so valuable that one could pay $1,000 an hour for the privilege of being able to engage in devotional service. Not that, well, I have to get some money for this, so I'm not going to do it. You're not a devotee, Prabhu. If you think you have to get paid to do the service, you're not a devotee. You're just not even, you're not a devotee at all. You're just a karmi, you see. One who's willing to pay money to do service, that's the move, you see. So how to actually develop that mood? In the beginning, we don't have it. Let's face the reality. But if you just do it, try to do it in a nice, loving way, even though you don't always feel like that, try to always do it like that. And the love will come. Just like Prabhupada said, even if you do not feel the ecstasy to dance in the kirtan, do it anyway and the ecstasy will come, you see. So I don't feel any love, but let me, how would I do this offering if I really felt love? How would I do it in a loving way, you see? Do that, and then, because love is actually there within your heart already. You have love for Krishna. Pure love for Krishna is already there within your heart. If you sincerely try to do things in the best possible way to Krishna, even if the feeling of love is not there, that sincere, dutiful mood will bring the love out. Duty, as I said earlier, duty is love in an immature state. Acting out of duty is actually love in an immature stage. It's the green mango. Love is the ripened mango, and duty is the green mango. So this is the last one. We're already over time. Is it true that pure bhakti is that one serves beloved without expecting anything in return? Absolutely true. The disciple comes, carries out the order of the spiritual master just to feel the spiritual master's affection. Is this pure bhakti? That's an interesting question. Actually, the mood is, I just want to please, if you do it to please your spiritual master, that is pure bhakti. What if the spiritual master gets angry at you, the way you did your service, and he chastises you? Would you consider that feeling his affection? Yes? If you would consider that even his anger of chastisement is affection, then I would say it is pure. But if it's like, I wanted the spiritual master to say, oh, you're such a nice disciple, you're wonderful, you're my one of my best disciples, then it's not pure. You're wanting to be, you know, patted on the head. But if you're in the mood of whatever the spiritual master gives you, you understand it's his loving affection, and you just want to get that you want to please him, then it's pure. Yeah. Okay, so these were very nice questions. We thank you all very much. We're heading out today for Canberra and on to Melbourne after that, and we'll look back to coming back next year. We thank you all very, very much. Anybody who has... Oh, one more? All right. One more for the road. Any tips that you can share on getting up early and getting all 16 round them before Mangalarti? Well, it's just a matter of desire. You have to give yourself enough time to do it. And you could always take a nap during the day if you needed to. Prabhupada split his sleep up. You can always split your sleep up. You have to see how much time it takes you to nicely chant 16 rounds and how much time it takes you to get in and out of the bathroom and put on your tilak and what time Mangalarti is. Now, if you're talking about somebody in the ashram, whose question? Yeah. So in your situation, you have to see how long it takes you to chant your rounds, how long it takes you to take a shower, and then see what time Mangalarti is, 4:30, and just do the mathematics. Well, it takes me, you know, 2 hours to chant my rounds, 20 minutes to take a shower. So, and one little tip,
that I find is helpful, shave the night before. In the morning, that'll save you a few minutes in the morning. You can shave before going to rest, and you wake up, you don't have to shave in the morning. And you can floss your teeth also the night before. So all you have to do is a little quick brush with no flossing and no shaving. That way you can get in and out of the bathroom even quicker in the morning. Little tips like that. But yeah, you just have to see how long it takes. Give yourself enough time and set the alarm. Now with these smartphones, you can set put an alarm, you can set the alarm for 2:15, 2:16, 2:17. It keeps going off until you finally pulls you out, you know. These smartphones are pretty cool. You can put like 20 alarms, 1 minute after the other, just boom, it keeps going off until you finally come out of your stupor. Oh, tell us to get up. And nice, you can have a kirtan, you know. On my smartphone, I have Prabhupada, you know, that famous kirtan, Hare Krishna, the Vande Hum, the happening album recording. I have that on, that's my alarm. Prabhupada singing, Vande Hum, Shri Guru, Shri Jatapada Kamalam. So yeah, you just have to have that desire and determination and just do it. And it's actually a very powerful thing to get up early, get all your rounds done before Mangalarti, and then during. And then if you have service to do, like I see you in the Bajari room, you don't have to be in anxiety, but my rounds aren't done yet. Here I am doing service during the japa period, my rounds aren't done. Then you get some anxiety, and then you go to breakfast, my rounds aren't done, and then I have to do this and that, my rounds aren't done, this anxiety, and then it's time to take rest, my rounds aren't done. It's like, you know, it's anxiety. There's a Prabhupada says that if you finish all your rounds by 10 a.m., you'll have a day free of anxiety. But my advice is finish all your rounds before you take prasadam every day. And then you're really going to have a day free of anxiety. That first I feed my, first I give a full meal to my soul. 16 rounds is a full meal, you see. So first thing, I give my soul a full meal. And then I think about the body after that. That's my best advice for japa. Get them all done before breakfast, and you're going to be high-flying in transcendental bliss the whole day. Because you put your soul first before your body, you see. So we'll look forward to coming back to Sydney next year. Keep up the good work here. I'm so enlivened to see so many devotees at Mangalarti. It used to be like a ghost town here. The only devotee would come to be the Pujari, and then on the day that he offered the arti, and then the day when he wasn't offering the arti, he'd be sound asleep during the Mangalarti. It's still happening like that a little bit here. But at least there's a few of you now who are coming. It's wonderful. It's so wonderful. I actually look forward to coming to Mangalarti instead of dreading completely empty temple room like it used to be here. So I'm very happy. I advocated Super Saturday that kind of fizzled out. That every Saturday all the congregation should come. And that didn't last very long. And it fizzled out. That every Saturday all the congregation should come and have Mangalarti here together. Somehow that didn't catch on. But at least a few of you are coming every day, and I'm very indebted to you boys who are coming every day for Mangalarti. I very much appreciate that. And I know you're getting a lot of mercy from Mother Gopinath for doing that. So please keep up this standard of coming every day for Mangalarti, and you will feel how the blessings of the Lord are showering you like torrents of rain in the Indian monsoon season. So we'll stop here. Gantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.
His Grace Srimad Sankarsan Das Adhikari Maharaj ki jai.